Now, this may be a rather unusual way to introduce the topic of elders, but in my mind, I think it may be a helpful way to look at this topic. When you look at the Old Testament, you find that God's people were sometimes referred to or looked upon as being sheep. God, of course, would have been the shepherd. And in the New Testament, you have this same kind of analogy. Elders are, Jesus is, of course, the chief shepherd. Peter tells us that in the book of 1 Peter chapter 5. And then you have, in every congregation, you have local leadership, Acts 14, verse 23. And those local leaders are referred to as elders. Elders, the Bible says in a number of places, they shepherd the flock. They watch over the sheep. Well, as I was thinking about how to start this particular Bible study as far as elders and Christians, the people that they watch over, I thought, why not go back and see what the Bible tells us about sheep? There are some passages where that word is used or the image is used to describe things as far as spiritual leadership. But you also have the idea of sheep and flock being used sometimes in a literal sense. And as I went back and looked at this, it struck me that there are a number of passages that we can use to make spiritual application. So if you've looked at the introduction, we know Jesus extensively in John 10 talked about sheep and how he's the good shepherd and how he's got a fold and the Gentiles were going to be that other fold that he was going to bring in and so forth. And he used this comparison. Other Bible writers use this comparison. So it's logical for us to use it as well. So this is what we want to do. Go through some of these passages. I don't know that we're going to get through them all today, maybe about half of them, and then pick up, Lord willing, next time with the remainder of them. But let's start thinking about elders, their work, and lessons that we can draw from by going through the verses that we have. Let's get a couple helpers lined up. Genesis 4, verse 2. And we'll also, after we talk about that, look at Matthew 9, 36. Who wants to? All right, Steve will start us off with Genesis 4, verse 2. And then who wants to be prepared? That'll be Sherman with Matthew chapter 9, verse 36. Genesis 4, verse 2. Let's begin there. Okay, very early in the Bible, we've got two brothers. One's a tiller of the ground, the other is a keeper of sheep. Now, I don't know that God had this specifically in mind, but it's interesting that of all the animals that God could have used to describe the people in the church, he used sheep. He could have used cattle. He could have used camels. A lot of animals he could have chosen from, but he used sheep. And one of the first things that we read about sheep is that what needs to be done with them? They need to be kept. If you've looked at some pictures of shepherds, you know, or you're probably at least inclined to think that at night, in ancient times, where did the shepherd sleep? You get the sheep all in the little corral, and where did the shepherd sleep?
Right.
All right, he's right at the door, you know, and that, I think, ties in very well with John chapter 10. You know, I'm the door of the shepherd. I'm not going to go anywhere. If you try to take that information, especially what we just read from Genesis 4, verse 2, sheep need to be kept. Moving that over into the spiritual realm, when we think about elders in the church today, what points could we extract from that? All right, they need to watch over the people. Anybody ever work at a job where you had a business owner that was really off hands, off site? I mean, he established a business, it was running pretty well, and for the most part, he just wanted to collect the money. Anybody ever been in a position like that? Okay, one, two, three. At least we're familiar with that kind of thing. I mean, you know, and that's, if you can get that deal and you don't want to be there, that's a nice arrangement for you as a business owner. Do you think that there are some elders or some people who want to be elders that have that same mindset, same mentality? I'm an elder.
I hope not.
Well, we hope not. But do you think there's some, I'm an elder, and what am I going to do? The sheep are over there, and I'm going to be over here. And I'm going to keep them, but I'm going to keep them from where? A distance. That's exactly right. Sheep need to be kept. And if you're going to keep sheep, we've seen it out there, you're walking through the 4-H fairgrounds. If you own sheep, are you going to get a little dirty and smelly? You know, you're dealing with livestock in this particular case, and you're going to have to get your hands dirty. So Genesis 4, verse 2, one of the key lessons that we can extract from this passage is if we've got elders, Or if a man becomes an elder, there needs to be the keeping work there. They need to realize that this is not an honorary position where you're just appointed to it and maybe show up once or twice a year, but there needs to be that, that guidance, there needs to be that protection. And yet for a lot of people, I think they sign on and say, oh yes, I want to be an elder, and they want to do it from a distance. It simply doesn't work that way. Let's pick up my Matthew 9:36 as a complimentary passage. Sherman?
When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd.
Okay, tying this in with what we had back in Genesis 4, verse 2. If you are not there, on site, if you will, trying to help out God's people, more than likely, you're going to have the result in Matthew 9:36. And what's the consequence? Absent leadership? All right, they're going to be scattered. I mean, they're not going to have direction and leadership, and they're not going to be kept very well. So the people who are thinking about serving as elders, the people who serve as elders, they need to make sure that they understand the responsibility that they have. Otherwise, the flock is going to be in a state of disarray to one degree or another. Glenda? We've often pointed out how kids need structure, guidance. I mean, if kids are not given the right way to go, you know, they just kind of try to figure things out and they head in all kinds of directions, usually which are not good. Do you think adults suffer from that same issue? Imagine a workplace where there was no foreman, there was no boss, everybody just kind of showed up. Well, you're probably not going to get much work done. The plant's probably going to close. It's not going to be a good thing. All right, anybody else before we flip over to Genesis 29:2? Virginia? Okay.
The question in it was, they had their elders, I don't have resigned, and the deacons were still in charge. And they want to know, but you have deacons without elders. Now, I never, I always heard you couldn't have deacons without elders. I don't, because we not know that they're
okay? Okay. All right. Well, let's go back and make the point that we just made a moment ago. We know that there is a problem without leadership, do we not? Matthew 9:36. If people don't have leaders, then they're going to be scattered. So there needs to be some kind of leadership. Point number one.
Well, what they said was, you know, he said the deacons should continue doing the job they were appointed to do, even though they didn't have elders.
Okay. All right, I'll add that into my answer as well. So we know that there's a problem without leadership. We know that we need to have leadership. The question then becomes, where do we get that leadership from? You may have some congregations that want to make the deacons basically serve as elders. Well, you don't have any authority for that because, you know, the elders, 1 Timothy 3:5, they are the people who are to guide, lead, direct that congregation. And again, I've not seen the article, but based on what you described, regardless of what kind of leadership you have in a local congregation, do you not need some people doing some things?
Yes.
All right. You still have, even if you lose your elders, you not need some Bible class teachers? I mean, if it's just, well, let's just have everybody show up and let's kind of figure out who's going to preach and who's going to teach Bible class and those kinds of things, you've again got chaos, which is the same problem in Matthew 9, verse 36. So there has to be some kind of structure. Structure within a biblical format. So if you've got, you may not continue to call them deacons, but if you've got a guy, for example, anybody, I didn't see this when I was here on Friday, but somewhere between Friday afternoon and this morning, we had a downspout come out on the back of the building. I suspect at least a few of us saw that. All right, suppose that you've got a deacon that's involved with building maintenance. You've lost your elders. Would, common sense, would it be wrong for that fellow who was doing building maintenance as a deacon to say, hey, I'm skilled with my hands, I'm going to take care of that item? I mean, that will be okay, right? Because, I mean, he's a member of the congregation. So if you're looking at things like that, you've got some structure in place as far as men and women doing various things. Who's preparing the communion? Well, we had this deacon's, or the elder's wife doing that. Well, you know, the elder has resigned, he's died or whatever, and okay for her still to prepare communion? Sure. But we then have this issue. We've got some people. We don't have any issue with them continuing to do their jobs. But we do have, excuse me, the problem of going from a congregation that has elders to now no elders. Well, no authority for the deacons to, you know, jump up into the role of elders. They can continue to serve in the ways that they were helping because those roles still need to be fulfilled. But you will have to find some new way for the loss of leadership to be fulfilled. Remember that Paul said in 1 Corinthians 6 to the Corinthians, they were arguing that all things are lawful. Everything's permissible. You know, for example, you know, we can use the body and food forever for whatever we want. Fornication in their mind was okay. And Paul said, even though all things may be lawful, you know, as a hypothetical, he said, not all things are expedient. Not all things are wise. You don't want to, even if we could do anything we want, I mean, we could jump off a cliff, but that's not a wise thing to do. And you would factor that in there as well, I think, that here's a situation. We want to make sure that the way that we proceed is not only consistent with the scriptures, but we want to make sure it's a wise way. Well, if you've got some men in the congregation who realize that they are not elders, but they can come together, and that when decisions come up, they can, to the best of their ability, use the scriptures to make decisions that will provide, at least to some degree, leadership there. That, to me, would be a wise way to proceed. You have some other congregations that may say, well, let's just turn it into a free-for-all, and let's go ahead and let everybody have a vote. Let's turn it into something like a democracy. Well, there again, you have some issues with Bible authority, but also you have an issue with, even if that was lawful, even if it was, would that be wise? Can you imagine a congregation of 250 people? They've lost their elders, and you say, we're going to have a meeting, and all 250 people can come and vote? Well, that's not going to be a good situation in any set of circumstances. So, like I say, biblical authority, you'd lack that. But in this particular case, if the deacons continued to do what they were doing, and you went to a structure similar to what we use here, to me, that would certainly be an expedient way to do it. Now that... Yeah, well, I would maybe not use the word lead, but to continue to serve in the way that they were serving. Because whether you have an eldership or not, some people are going to continue to do the same things in that congregation.
On that, there's an authority that God gave us. Christ was the head of the church, and then it was elders,
sure,
deacons, men, women, and children. The fact is that the deacons are basically guided by the elders. So
yeah,
what's the purpose? And otherwise, like you says, they become the elders if they take that,
yeah,
continue in that position. They can continue doing the things they were doing, but now the men of those congregations have to go together with the authority that God gave us and not giving these two men the authority, because that's like promoting them to elders and they may not be qualified.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And you do have, I didn't mention that, but you do have that divine ranking, where you've got the man being put as the head of the household. In the church, you also have male spiritual leadership there as well. So that would be one more reason why you would, like I say, it's not expedient to have everybody in the congregation vote. But from a biblical standpoint, as far as authorization, you've got male spiritual leadership. And exactly how that's going to come out in various places. You know, business meeting would be one option that would be consistent with that. Elders is obviously God's ideal will, his stated will on that particular point, and those kinds of things. But when you're in that situation, you've got to look at it in those ways.
So are you saying that they could keep the title, quote unquote, of deacon?
Okay. Again, let's go back and think about that principle from 1 Corinthians 6. Even if everything is okay, you may not want to do everything because not everything is wise. So taking that principle and applying it here, and again, this is going to be a decision that they make internally. But might there be some problems in a local congregation if you say, we don't have elders, but these guys are our deacons? Could that be a problem?
Yes.
That could be a problem because it could get into exactly what Doug described. Now, again, am I going to fault them if they make that choice?
No.
You know, that's going to be their own individual choice in that congregation. But there is the potential for some difficulties there, and in some places that has happened. They've lost their elders, or they never had elders. Deacons were appointed, and then those men just kind of assumed through maybe a process of time or this, that, or the other, and they were kind of looked upon as de facto or default elders. And there you have a problem now. You've got a thing that's inconsistent with the Scriptures, and you've got to deal with that. But you could say so-and-so is responsible for building maintenance. This person, or maybe we've got a couple people that are responsible. You know, we do a similar thing with ladies. You know, I've said before that deaconess, there is no feminine form of the word for deacon in the Bible. That's something that men have come up with. But, you know, we've got a lady that helps with that. We've got a group of ladies that help in this particular way. Nothing wrong with doing that. And we could treat the men in this the same way. And it's an expedient way to make sure that that gets covered. Let's see, I saw two hands, Dolores, you first.
I think a lot of it, too, comes down to attitude. If a deacon has been appointed and he has the right attitude, his attitude has nothing to do with being a leader. His attitude has to do with, I am a servant.
Yeah, and I think you'll see that sometimes. The person says, well, you're the deacon in charge. Now, I'm assuming that we're dealing with a situation where elders have been lost, and they've retained their quote-unquote deacons. Well, you're the deacon in charge of. A person who is mindful of that might say, I do take care of building maintenance. I do take care of this, that, or the other thing, and tries to reduce the focus away from idea of deacon. And it goes back to what we're talking about from Genesis 4, verse 2. A person says, well, I'm an elder. You know, those kinds of things. I've got the ability to help. I'm, you know, serving in this particular way. But a lot of times people are just really big on the title and not so excited about
it.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Not so much on the work.
Yeah. On that, what we're talking about, there's no examples of churches being run with deacons only. The examples is the elders, deacons, and then, as we said, with the hierarchy of the authority. I mean, I don't see any examples unless you see somewhere they had congregations that were running with deacons without elders.
Well, remember, in the New Testament, we've got a lot of early history.
Right.
You have the apostles. In Jerusalem, they seem to be directing things, which they would have had the authority. I mean, they're basically right under Christ. So you've got in Acts 2, which we'll talk about this morning, they were following the apostles' doctrine, and the apostles are making various decisions. When you've got the widow situation in Acts chapter 6, you know, the matter again is brought before the apostles, and they said, we're not going to wait tables, that's an important work, but we're going to find some other fellows to do that. And then you do read about some congregations that have elders. So that is God's idea plan. I would use the word transition, because the church is being set up, essentially. You've got it set up in Jerusalem, and then it's going to other places, and intended for all people, but initially they've got to start out with the Jews about 10 years past, and they're able to get over to the Gentiles, Cornelius, and so forth. So you do see that plan unfolding. And with male leadership, that's also part of the revealed plan. And those are the elements that we want to make sure that we stick with today. The apostles are gone, obviously, but we can have elders, as far as God's ideal plan. And if we're lacking in that, then again, to the best of our ability, start marching towards that goal. And sometimes to kind of take what Doug said and build on it a little bit, a congregation will say, well, let's go ahead and establish deacons first, and then we'll establish elders. Well, going back to that principle in 1 Corinthians 6, even if that is a lawful thing to do, is it a wise? Is it an expedient? Is it a smart thing to do? Well, I've yet to find anybody that's willing to make that argument, because we talk about the cart before the horse. You know, you've really got, you should have your leadership in place before, it'd be like a business. Imagine somebody going out and saying, I'm going to start a business, and we're going to hire the workers, and we're going to hire the leadership. Now, can you imagine that in the business world? Nobody thinks in that way. You get the structure in place. You got the money in place. You got the building in place. You got the management in place. And now that we've got everything, now we're going to bring in the workers. So some of it comes down to common sense.
Acts the 6th chapter, we read about the men that were chosen to serve the Grecian widows and things. They're not called deacons, however many people think of them as deacons. And that's the same thing with we can have certain people that are out there helping.
Yes.
But they don't hold that same office.
Exactly right. And they were content to do that because of the reason that Dolores gave. It's not that they were out there trying to come up with some fancy title, but, you know, here's the need, we're willing to serve. And the same thing today.
On top of that, he says, deacons are working toward being elders. So who are they guided by?
Where are we getting that?
I think he says, we're talking about the being desire to be an elder. As far as deacons go, they want to be desired.
No, okay, let's hold on there. Let's take a look at 1 Timothy 3. I think this is where you're pulling from, but I want to make sure I am thinking about the same passage that you are. 1 Timothy 3, verse 1. That says, faithful is the saying, if a man seeks the office of a bishop, or that would be an elder, he desires a good work. Is that what we're thinking about? Okay. Now that could be a deacon.
Right, it could be.
Or it could be a non-deacon.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
I don't agree with that.
Okay. All right. Was there a second part to that?
No, I just, it's probably a more of a, we take it as a, that's what, I don't want to explain it.
A natural stepping stone?
Yeah, a natural stepping stone.
Yeah. And
not necessarily
yes.
The example or the pattern.
Yeah. Ideally, if a man is serving as a deacon, he's doing well. Hopefully one day he'll serve in it as an elder. And there have been many cases of that. But you have had some brethren over the years who have assumed that this guy is a deacon, therefore at point X he's going to be an elder. Well, that's not necessarily true. There may be a lot of reasons. I mean, he may be a great deacon. Anybody ever seen a deacon who's over 50? Anybody ever see a deacon who's over 60? Anybody ever see a deacon who's over 70? If I've not seen that, at least I've heard somebody put forward potentially as a deacon. Now, for a lot of people, they would say, well, that seems to me to be kind of odd. You know, you got this, you know, old guy, 70 years old, 80 years old as a deacon. The Bible doesn't put any specific age on a deacon. And think about it in terms of a lady. Could you have a 90-year-old woman fixing communion? Sure. You know, now she may not be an elder's wife, but she simply wants to serve. So when we think about the topics that we're talking about with this class, we're we're talking about people who want to be involved with the work. You know, out there with the sheep, trying to help in various ways. Some are going to be elders, some are going to be doing some other things.
But not all deacons aspire or desire to be an elder.
That's true.
And that's one of, to me, that's one of the key things being an elder. Something that you want to do because you want to serve that way.
That's true. And sometimes people get pushy and say, well, you need to serve as an elder. You've been serving as a deacon. And, you know, again, maybe the guy is just not naturally inclined to serve in that particular way or not qualified. Brian, Dolores, and then Doug will go to you.
I think it's important too to remember that in a situation absent of elder, we don't have elders yet, some men need to demonstrate themselves to be elder material. Hospitality, teaching, those are qualifications of an elder that require demonstration to the congregation. Or listen to whoever's going to do so much. As in 1 Timothy 3, he was to identify people that were apt to teach or hospitable, and that's something that they have already started before they got the title of elder.
Yeah. When you look at 1 Timothy 3:10, now this is where Paul talks about deacons, but he says, and let these also first be proved, then let them serve as deacons. Now my question to someone would be, if a deacon needs to be proven before he serves, what about an elder? I mean, just as Jesus sometimes argued from the greater to the lesser or the lesser to the greater, here we can make that same kind of argument that the Lord made. So, yes, that's true. Dolores?
I was just thinking about the term that we used to hear years ago, he's a junior elder. I don't know where that came from, but I think it does quite a disservice to a deacon or anyone who, you know, called them that because it's, it's not like you're, I know someone who congratulated a new deacon and said, you know, this is quite an honor. And being the humble deacon that he was said, this is a matter of me being more of a servant.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are some congregations that have done similar things. And again, you go back to 1 Corinthians 6, even if all things are lawful, not all things are expedient. And it's certainly not an expedient to have whether you're dealing with elder or deacons, or especially with elders, a junior elder,
right,
or if you're dealing with the senior elder. You know, if you're an elder and you've got a decision that's coming up for discussion, and you're going to have to, you know, cast your vote for it. For example, you know, here's a missionary that we're going to support. You've got six elders. Three decide yay, three decide nay. Does a senior elder get a quarter extra vote? You know, so now you've got three nay, and you've got three and a quarter yay. You do have sometimes one that may be more talkative, or
I
less.
I actually meant, though, that people will refuse to begin.
Yeah, and it's just, it's not wise,
right,
because when you look at church history, that's one of the issues that arose. There became a dominant elder, and then you've got the elder over the church, basically, and then finally you've got Catholicism coming out of that. So it the 1 Corinthians 6 passage, we'll probably use that until you're absolutely sick of it. But even if all things are lawful, not all things are expedient. And that has, church history has proven it, recent congregational experiences have proven that that is just not a good thing. So.
I know you're going to get into it. I mean, we're just at the beginning of it. So
yeah.
There's plenty of passages I know we'll look at that talk about the qualifications, and that really is what comes down to it, is are they qualified?
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll talk about it, I'm sure, later, is faithful children mean all their children and everything else that you talk about, so.
Well, the qualifications I'm going to deal with in sermons, so we'll probably have less public feedback there. But, okay. Glenda?
In the early church, too, there were,
right. Now, the Jews were a little ahead of us in some ways, because if you've got a fellow who was living, you know, good Hebrew, good Jewish life, he probably had a lot of those qualities. He would have had a good knowledge of the Old Testament. Maybe he had some spiritual gifts. So in some places where they had a lot of background with Judaism, it may not have been that difficult to have come up with fellows for elders. So that may have almost been kind of a natural thing. But you do have those general statements, you know, where Paul says, for this cause, you're in Crete to appoint elders in every church as I gave you charge. And, you know, there was they were able to exist without elders and still serve God. But as we talked about before, that was part of the progression that God wanted to make. He wanted to get to the point where they could have elders. Okay, I think we're ready for point two, or B. Still sticking with the book of Genesis, chapter 29. Let's see what we've got in the second verse. Who wants to read that for us? Genesis 29:2. Lois, thank you.
And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep were lying there beside it, for from that well they watered the flocks. Now the stone on the mouth of the well was large.
Okay. All right. So kind of building on where we were just a few minutes ago, you know, we need elders. Without them, Matthew 9:36, we're going to be like sheep that are just kind of going in no direction if there is no leadership. But now as we think about this next passage, what comes to mind? Genesis 29:2. You've got sheep, you've got people in a local congregation. They might not just be scattered. What else might be happening? All right, they're not doing anything. You know, they're, I don't want to use the word lazy, but let's just use the word inactive. When we think about elders in the New Testament, looking at Genesis 29:2, what should part of their job be? All right, there needs to be some motivation. Well, a couple of the things come to mind. Do you think sometimes people are motivated, at least to some degree, but they still don't do anything? That almost sounds like a contradiction. They're motivated, but they still don't do anything. They need to be guided. You know, here you have sometimes some people who are willing to help. They're willing to do some stuff. But what do they say? Just show me, just tell me what to do, and I will be one of your best workers. It's kind of like that in maybe an office situation. There's a person that says, oh, I'm willing to work. I'm looking for something to do. If only you would give me some guidance. Well, hopefully elders are going to be the kinds of people that are involved, the hands-on people that we talked about from Genesis chapter 4, and then they'll say, hey, these are some things that you need to do. Let me add to that a little bit. When you think about motivating people, if you've got a congregation of 100 people, or let's say 50 either way, do you think in that congregation you're going to have some people who are pretty much self-motivated? They're going to on their own be looking for things to do and be active and those kinds of things? All right, I think that's a fair conclusion for most places. However, in that congregation of 50 or 100 or even 20, will there always be some that are not motivated? Yes. And those are going to be some of the people that the elders try to motivate. Do you think the elders are always going to be successful? No. It's just kind of like a child. Parents can have kids that are tough to motivate. Some, I mean, boy, they are right out of bed. School bus is coming, and when it comes to doing the homework and the other stuff, mom and dad barely have to ask. And then for 18 years, there are some other kids, which some here have had to experience to some degree or another. You've just got to be on them and on them and on them, and it just seems like they never get with the program. Maybe a great child, but motivation is just different for some reasons. Elders are going to find that in the church as well. So if you have an elder who wants to be this hands-off guy over here, and say, I really don't want to be involved in the lives of the people. I just kind of want to have the title and be an elder in name only. It's going to show in the congregation. And again, there's only so much a single elder. There's only so much a group of men can do. But when we think about elders, this is part of the task. It's part of the responsibility. Any thoughts on this? All right, let's pick up with that next verse, Genesis 29:3. Who'd like to read it? Steve? Genesis 29:3, when you're ready. Elders can motivate people. Genesis 29, verse 2. But now as we look at Genesis 29, 3, what happens with the stone? All right. The activity stopped, isn't it? When you think about congregations, and again, this may seem to be kind of an odd point, but I think it demonstrates the value of having an eldership. They can get things going, but elders can also do what? They can stop some things. And when you look at leadership, sometimes some things need to be stopped, don't they? What's the definition of insanity? All right, you expect a different result even though you've done this over and over and you finally hope, well, this time it's going to work. Do you think a congregation can fall into that same trap? There are some churches, I think, that have been trying to do the same thing for 45 years. And it didn't work year one, and it didn't work through year 25, and now it's year 45. Do you think a different... Not doctrinal, but do you think sometimes a different change of tactics might be useful? Yes. You know, sometimes things, if it's not working, then you probably need to go back and look at it and say, let's revise this, let's look at some different plans, let's look at some different alternatives. So, once again, trying to apply some information about sheep as we look at in the scriptures, we can begin to pick out some things as far as elders and what should be taking place in congregations. They're trying to keep things moving in a good and certainly a scriptural way so that God's people can do as much as they can and be as effective as they can. Anything else that you want to talk about before we pick up with verse 9? All right, same chapter. Who wants to pick up from Doug? Are you reading or are you talking? Okay.
Talking at the same time.
Okay.
Genesis 29:9. Mm-hmm. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep. She was a shepherdess.
Okay. Sticking with the plan that we outlined for today, trying to use these passages and apply them to elders in the church. If you're looking at this on your own, what might you try to extract from that as far as a point of personal application? Well, you might try to do that. That's not the direction that we're headed in class, but there are some people that are thinking in terms of female elders.
She's a worker.
Well, okay, you can take that tack.
She worked. An elder, or in this case, Jacob was seeing that she needed some help, and he reached out to help.
All right, I think that's another great lesson. You could take that. That wasn't the lesson that I had in mind, but again, that would be a wonderful lesson. Anything else?
She obeyed her parents. I mean, she's telling her father she...
Yeah, that's kind of what struck me. When you think about a person who's serving as an elder, who do the sheep belong to? The father. They are not his sheep. But I suspect there are some people that have that view as an elder. This is my congregation. No, it's not. Who's the church belong to?
Well,
Christ. And if you don't respect that, if you don't live in view of that, should you expect to fare very well in the sight of God? No. So if you have someone, and this is true not only for elders, but shouldn't it be true for all of us? I mean, this is the Christ's church or the Father's church. It belongs to deity. But you know, if you've got somebody that's coming in and doing some things that are bad for the flock, you think God cares? Yeah. Do you think God cares about the elder that's trying to be that standoff guy? You've been a poor shepherd. Or if he's heavily involved with the flock and doing some bad things. So when we think about elders or even our own lives as far as interacting with the congregation, the sheep belong to the Father, and he's very, very concerned about the sheep. So make good choices for those as we deal with others and for those who may one day serve as elders. Anything else before we look at Betty? Yeah. Yeah. You think about it in terms of physical. A person has been given, charge over some precious object. Or, in the Old West, if you remember, there were, and it still happens, I think of it as more of the past, but in some cultures, you've got the lady who's the governess. You know, there's another word for it today. Maybe somebody can... A nanny. You've got a guardian that's going to protect the child. Can you imagine going back to the parents and saying, well, you gave me a job to protect your child, and now your child has been killed. Now your child, he's lost a leg or lost a limb, lost an eye, those kinds of things. You don't want to go back and make that kind of report. And that should be our attitude, especially when we deal with things related to the church. Yeah, look at what I let happen to one of your sheep when I could have prevented it. Or look at what I did to one of your sheep. So bad, bad stuff. Anybody else? Okay, next passage is next chapter in Genesis. This is Genesis chapter 30, verse 2. Who wants to be a reader? Jeff?
And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in God's stead, and who hath withheld from thee the
blessing? I had a typo there, is it? Okay. We're looking for, I think, the speckled sheep here. Laban, was it 29... Is it 29:32?
Or 30:32.
Okay. Okay, Jeff, can we move you down a few verses? 30:32. I apologize for that. I thought I had that right, but
I will pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire.
Okay, thanks to both of you for that. Again, trying to take this passage and look at it in terms of the church today. What would you pull out if you were trying to make a point of application for elders? Well, okay, you could look at it that way. You need to do that if you're going to appoint elders.
Establishing order.
Well, okay, that would be fine too.
You're different.
Yes, that's the point that really jumps out to me. If you're going to deal with the father's sheep, once again, you can make some comparisons to the work world. What are you going to find among the people? You're going to find differences, right? And what are some of those differences going to be? All right, you're going to find people who have different abilities. Now, if you're going to know what those abilities are, can you be that kind of standoff elder? No. You're going to have to get in there just as an individual shepherd or just as the people. Do you think the people that show the sheep at the 4-H fair know their sheep? They do. I mean, they know the body and they expect certain actions. If they're shearing maybe this particular part of the body, they're familiar with the sheep. So we've got strengths and weaknesses. That should be one of the things that elders try to come up with the knowledge of. What else as far as differences among the sheep, God's people? Well, let's put it in terms of kids. When you think about dealing with children, and this assumes that you've had to, or maybe you've got grandkids, or you've spent a lot of time around children, what kinds of differences do you see among kids? you find different attitudes. You have some that are positive. So if you're an elder and you know that you've got somebody who is typically happy, upbeat, and then you've got somebody else that's typically discouraged, do you think you're going to try to deal somewhat differently with those two? Absolutely. What else when you deal with kids do you find as far as differences that because of that knowledge you try to adjust for?
Some are outgoing, some like to keep them themselves.
Okay. So again, if an elder is going to deal, if you've got somebody who is just super quiet, and you know, very reserved, and you need somebody to come up and teach a Bible class or preach, you think you want to run up to him every time and say, "Hey, I want you to preach next Sunday night." If you do that as an elder, what do you think he's going to do?
Hide.
He is going to go into hiding because you're putting him in a spot where he is simply not comfortable. What else? Elders, as far as being familiar with and trying to work with the differences in people. All right. Yeah. You're trying to take into account the various circumstances, the attitudes, all the little nuances of an individual, just as you would with a child. Parents with two or more kids will tell you, I think, almost invariably, they do not deal with their kids exactly the same. It is based on the individual characteristics of a child that you adjust. Now, you're trying to be fair, but still, and the same thing is true with employees. There are some employees you can go into and you can just lay it out straight. They just say, don't sugarcoat it, you just tell me the way it is. But there are some other people, if you do that, you'll destroy them. Or you're going to get a very unfavorable reaction. So when you think about the different sheep here, I think that's a great point for elders. If you're going to deal with people, you again have to know the flock and try to act accordingly. And that's going to be one of the good things that we find with elders. Anything else that you want to add on that particular thought? Okay, let's squeeze in another one. This comes from the next chapter, Genesis 31, verse 19. Reader? Glenda?
And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's.
Okay. Shearing sheep, common thing. We've seen that in our area. A lot of people that have dealt with sheep, I mean, that's just a standard practice. And I mentioned there are a couple of reasons. You don't shear that wool. I mean, that's heavy. It makes mobility different. It makes mobility difficult. And it's going to stress sheep in hot weather. So sometimes sheep need to be shorn. Once again, can you make any application of that when we think about the spiritual realm? Literal elders. All right, you're removing some of the wool, obviously.
Molding somebody, maybe.
All right. I think, you know, that is one of the big things that would come to my mind. You know, you're trying to help them shape and trying to help them, you know, redirect their life a little bit. So when you think about an elder, in my mind, and over the years, I've heard several people say, well, what do the elders do? And the impression many times that is left with me is that they just sit down and they make some financial decisions. Okay, we're going to send money here. We're not going to send money here. And let's figure out who does what in worship. And okay, that's the life, the job, the role of an elder. There's a lot more to it than that. You are trying to mold. You're trying to help guide. You're trying to literally help shepherd these people. And, you know, sometimes there needs to be some pruning. Sometimes some adjustments. You're trying to help some people make some corrections in life. So there's a lot more to serving as an elder and serving in some other ways than a lot of people realize. So we'll continue with this, see how it goes for a little while, and try to prepare our minds for some additional things about elders.